Well, it was the last race before the summer break, and what a race it was. No shortage of drama, as we've seen over the most recent events. Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast. As always, it is myself, Samantha, and Anton. And joining us this weekend is Ajit, who has been here on the podcast before and also obviously does like to play the game, maybe not always as successful as some in the game. But Ajit, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, hello. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, we're all good. I mean, there's a lot of, like Sam, like you were saying, a lot of post-race drama this time again to discuss. So I think let's get right into it and let's start talking a little bit about the beginning of the weekend. And it's nice to have you back on, Ajit. Actually,
cheers,
you
man.
You were on already a couple of times. You were on the podcast for the Grand Prix in Canada, which we all went to last year. And then you came back on for the race right after, I think, which was the Austrian Grand Prix, and also later on for Italy.
Yep, it was 2 weeks back to back. It's been a while.
Yes. It has been a while.
Yeah.
And how did you look at the race this weekend? And how did you look at, well, let's start a little bit about talking about Friday and Saturday.
Well, to be fair, I couldn't really get too much into free practice. It looked as though, from the bits that I did manage to catch, it looked as though, you know, it was looking to be a Red Bull and McLaren show. That's honestly what I expected it to be, based on the results, based on whatever, you know, pieces of free practice I managed to catch, and I was fully expecting that to happen. I mean, granted, despite the penalty, I actually thought Max would be able to catch up and get on the podium somehow, but you know, it is what it is. Pleasant surprise. Like, it was a good race.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point that you're making. I think on the Friday, which was the only two practice sessions where we had some dry running, we could see that both the Red Bull and the McLarens looked quickest on race pace. Then we had a very wet session of FP3, which also was mostly stopped because of the red flag, because of the Stroll crash, which would mean that, very little running in wet conditions, which ultimately would be the situation in the qualifying session, with a lot of not even super hard rain. It was mostly, you know, it was drizzle, but the track was wet. The whole session was driven on intermediate tires, and of course, well, the practice sessions on the Friday were more
it was all dry on Friday, I believe, if I remember correctly.
That would set the runnings for the race for the Sunday, which was also a dry race. But then let's talk a little bit about qualifying. I think, or if we want to, like, before talking about qualifying, I think prior to the race weekend, there was some news coming out. Well, you mentioned that we knew ahead into the weekend that Verstappen would get a 10th place grid drop, but we also heard some news out of the Alpine garage, and I'm not really talking about the new livery, which I kind of like, but we also learned that Ocon is moving to Haas for next season. We already knew he would be leaving Alpine, and we also heard that after this weekend, we will no longer have Bruno Famin as a team principal for Alpine. What do we think about that?
Yes, definitely some interesting news, especially coming out of Alpine. I think that based on what we had seen, I don't think it was a big surprise that Ocon had gone to Haas, just judging by the rumors recently. But I would say Bruno leaving the Alpine was a little surprising. I mean, we'll see where Alpine goes at this point in terms of direction. They've clearly had their challenges, so I'd like to hope that maybe there is some optimism in the future in terms of whatever that restructuring may be.
I think I kind of echo that as well, but a huge part of what, again, this is just based off the news and what I've been reading, heavy parts of it would be related to the news that's come out that they're going to be adopting Mercedes equipment in the future. So, you know, what's really going to happen to the Alpine name moving forward? And in terms of Ocon moving to Haas, I think that's going to be a really good partnership between him and Diamond that's coming up. I'm looking forward to seeing that moving forward.
Yeah, no, that's all going to be very interesting to look at. I'm already interested first to see how they do in the second half of the season. I mean, of course, they started this season not as one of the top teams, and they seem to get back at it. Again, we've seen an Alpine score points this weekend, so that's good, but it looks like there's not many people that are staying in that team. So, and like you said, I think the Ocon Bearman duo is going to be very interesting too. But then let's get into the Saturday qualifying session, where most noteworthy, of course, is the Leclerc pole, which I think we were all surprised by, and I'm guessing you were very very enthusiastic about that, Ajit.
I mean, yeah, of course, it's great to see him back on pole. We all know what he does on Saturdays and how good he is. He is one of the best drivers when it comes to Saturdays, and you know, he has been struggling with the car for a while. I don't know what it is. There's been a couple of things that just haven't felt right after the upgrades that both him and Sainz have complained about. And even if you listen to the press conference after that, he said this was the first time that he actually felt comfortable with the car. So it's to no surprise, if he feels comfortable with the car, he is going to be able to pull off performance on a Saturday. So it was good. It was good seeing him up there. Obviously, you know, granted that it was Max who technically time-wise took pole without the disqualification, it would be interesting to see how the Ferraris develop and fix moving forward, because I still feel like there are gaps and holes in that performance.
Yeah, I think all in all, it was a relatively unexpected pole for Leclerc, but it was also, I think it was a result of a good strategy, because they were one of the few teams, I think most of the teams went for their new set of inters during the first flying lap of the Q3 session, and it was only Leclerc and Verstappen. Well, Verstappen had two new sets of inters, but Leclerc went on a used set for his first flying lap, and I guess a lot of teams were also doubting whether rain would intensify a little bit, which would mean that the second run might have been on the wet tire, and then, you know, not using for your first flying lap the new set of intermediate tires would be a waste not to do it. But Leclerc opted to do it the other way around, and I think because of it, he just set a very good lap. It was a very clean lap, but even himself, he mentioned after in his post-quali interview that he was slightly surprised and felt that it was a clean lap, but didn't know it was going to get him pole. Well, like you said, Ajit, of course, still being 6 tenths behind Verstappen, but that was exciting for Ferrari fans.
Funny thing is though, I don't know if you noticed, but when you look back at the data and the performance of that pole lap, he actually wasn't quickest in any one of the three sectors.
Yeah, you're right.
He was somewhere in the mid-range for each one of the sectors, but combined, he somehow or other pulled a better performance overall throughout that entire lap that he put forth that got him that pole position after the DQ.
Yeah.
So it is really interesting.
I guess it's also a result of all the teams going for slightly different setups and thus being good in different sectors. So, for example, the Red Bull opted to go for a higher downforce setup, which made them very good in the second sector. And then, for example, McLaren went for lower downforce, were good in the first and the third sector. So it was difficult for the Ferrari to beat any car or all the cars on one given sector, but combining good sectors, or let's say above average sectors on the three different ones, yeah, that got him pole. But you're right, that was definitely interesting to see. And I think another interesting, or as much unexpected, so was Perez actually having a very good day on the Saturday and putting it on, well, let's say P3, but that moved him up to P2. Although I gotta say, he was very close to being out in Q2, where he just made it by 0.03 of a second. It was almost Albon who would have gone at the expense of Perez into Q3.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that at the end of the day, it was a very close call. And I mean, it provided Perez going at the end of Q3 the result that he had, a decent result we haven't seen recently out of him, and a very good opportunity that could set him up for the race to be able to make a considerable difference and maybe have a much better result than what he's had recently. As we know, he clearly has a lot of pressure in the Red Bull garage. But before we even get into his race result, I think that ultimately for qualifying, this was he just snaked in, but he also managed to be able to put on a decent lap and secure a good spot going into the race.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think even on the Q1 session, he was at some point he was in a drop zone, but then actually showed that sometimes he does perform well under pressure. And you're right. I think he's it's up and down with him, let's just say. I mean, sometimes he has good Saturdays, sometimes he has good Sundays. All in all, I think a decently interesting qualifying session. I mean, in general, for me, I do like to see changing weather conditions. It's nice to have actually two different days where you have one, either it being the race or the qualifying session, one being relatively wet, not too wet, of course, like we've seen a couple of years ago, and then the other one being dry. That mixes up things. It gets you to watch the drivers fight the elements, and I like that. I like to see things get mixed up that way, and I guess going into Sunday, we'd see that the weather conditions were completely different.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And I think one last thing to touch on the Saturday as well. I think all the drivers managed the weather really well and the unpredictability of it. And at the same time, if you look at Q3, the gap, even Q2 actually, the gap from first to last in those times were around about 1 second. So it was a pretty close qualifying all round where people were just constantly switching in and out of positions. And it was very, very entertaining. All for us to see an absolutely dry Sunday.
Yeah, so I mean, now that we are all touching on the Sunday, let's all get into the Sunday. Let's just start on lap one as we usually do, Sam.
Yeah, I think that it was surprisingly all drivers on the grid remained unscathed, considering Spa and its history. I was very surprised about that. However, I would say that Hamilton had a great start. Perez, he was in a position where he could have really capitalized, and unfortunately, I don't think he did. He suffered a pretty disappointing start that Lewis was able to take advantage of and very quickly was able to secure get into second. And from that point on, I think that the speed was there for Hamilton. You saw it from the Mercedes. Verstappen had a really great start. And unfortunately, in contrast, Lando didn't do so well. I mean, there was a moment where he went a little wide and then at one point he just dropped. And it was pretty much throughout the duration of the race after that, him trying to catch up. And I think, we'll get into that strategy in mind in a little bit. But just initially from the start, I think we saw some really great driving from Hamilton and some really smart reaction from Max.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with how lap one went. I think it was pretty evident the strength that Verstappen had at his start. He almost always pulls off a really good start whenever it comes to races. At the same time, it's good to see Lewis starting to get the feel of the car again, because it's made the more recent races a lot more interesting to watch. It's a lot more competitive now, and this is what I've been asking for a long time. And this it just was the perfect start all around as a viewer and as a fan, because you don't get the mess and chaos of any crashes, but it was still very clean, very competitive. It was very, I want to say, smart and well-planned overtakes, be it at the start, be it in the second lap. It was all patience, biding their time, and all the drivers, I think, did really well. For example, even I think it was Oscar. I may be jumping ahead of myself over here, but Oscar made some pretty good moves as well throughout. And I don't know. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the start. And, Charles, I really, really was happy that he was able to maintain the first place going into the first lap. But you could just see that the car is not what everyone wants it to be, what he expects it to be. And I think given what he did and given the machinery he has, he did the best he could. And Hamilton's just, he looks like he's happy in the car now. And it's going to be interesting to see where this goes moving forward. Even George had a good start as well. I don't think that should be discounted.
Yeah, looking at the start, what I thought was interesting was that we didn't see too many drivers that went for different strategies, but we saw that Sainz was the only one from the top teams that started on hards. And I had thought that he was going to try and pull off what in the end Russell did, which we'll get to, who did the one stopper. And yeah, I thought that that was going to be Sainz's strategy, but then he... yeah, he did go on the medium and then back on the hards. And also Joe started on hards, but he had a very short race. I think it lasted only about 6 laps or so. And we saw Ricardo on the soft tire, which, well, actually, it did get him a single point in the end, although be it in a slightly interesting way. I think I guess it's the topic to talk about is... moving towards what happened after the race, although I guess we all thought that it looked like a great weekend for the Mercedes, scoring a 1-2. I mean, it's been a very long time since that happened, and I'm going over in my head now, when was the last time that it actually happened? But then again, it didn't happen this time because of the disqualification for George.
Yeah, I think that one thing that we saw this weekend during the race was tire strategy was a huge, huge factor to a lot of teams and a lot of drivers' results. And whether it was what tires were being used, but also more importantly, when those stops were taking place. And, you know, before even touching on Mercedes, an example of that would be also Lando. During the pit stop that he had that was a little delayed after Max, who he was pretty much racing against at that point, I think that affected him. And then moreover, you know, you look at the situation with Mercedes, and originally they got a 1-2, but you had two opposite strategies in mind. You had one where Lewis had played more of the approach of less tire degradation and having more pit stops. And then you had Russell, on the other hand, who what appeared to be more of an independent decision for himself to stay out. He pitted on lap 10, I believe.
Yeah.
And from that point on, raced the duration of the race with those tires. And, you know, rules are rules, no matter what. And as we know, he was underweight and suffered a disqualification at the end. But at the same time, when we just map out his performance as a driver and the fact that he was able to maintain that vehicle with the tires that he had. And on top of that, he was, what I found most exciting was the last 5 laps of the race where he had Lewis behind him on fresher tires, and he managed to perform, not only managed to keep pace effectively, but also create a very good defensive position and keep him out of a DRS range for most of the time. And I think that was quite remarkable. I think being able to execute that strategy with the confidence of thinking that you were able to get to the end and then being able to secure the win was a fantastic result for him and also a fantastic drive. And it's not to discredit the fact that Lewis didn't do a fantastic job as well, but it is disappointing, although rules are rules, it's disappointing to see a driver put on such a great performance and have it removed as a result of being underweight. I mean, one can question that had he have pitted, if that maybe would have played a factor in terms of the weight itself, the weight distribution, but... you know, we'll never know, will we?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, we get the car gets weighed, of course, on its last tires, and those are the tires that he did that 34 lap stint on. So, of course, those tires have a lot of wear, and that definitely must have played a big role. So, you're right, if he would have gone for a two stopper, but he wouldn't have won the race, and it would have been very easy cruise to the finish. I mean, let's not disregard the fact that Hamilton had a great race and managed it very well for the longest amount of time. I really thought he was gonna win the race. But now talking about it, I just asked the question to myself. In the meantime, I looked it up. So since we like quizzes, when was the last time that Mercedes scored a 1-2?
I knew you were gonna come with this. I knew it. It wasn't last year. It was the year prior, I believe.
Brazil.
Yeah, very good. No? Ah, you guys are good. Yeah, because George Russell win in Brazil 2022. Actually, Hamilton finished second there. Yeah.
Yeah. So 2 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, and the one before that.
Oh.
Let's see who, because you were both right on the Brazil one. Sort of, I felt that you both came up with that. So let's go to the one prior to that.
The one prior to that. So Brazil was in 2022. That would, I want to say, be sometime in 2021, no? It was sometime in 2021. I just can't remember which race in 21. Was it also Brazil 21?
There were actually no Mercedes 1-2s in 2021. There were five 1-2s in 2020, yeah. The last one being in Emilia Romagna. But again, it doesn't really matter for the stats, because the Brazil 2022 is still going to be the last one for now. And yeah, it must have felt very bad for George. I mean, this podium and this win was quite emotional for him. You could see after the race, much more so, I would say, than the one in Austria, which of course was a great win, but it wasn't really on merit. So then winning like this with a great strategy, with a great race all around, and with both the Mercedes is on the podium. Yeah, I just felt that it must have been one of his best races or best days in his career, perhaps with that, the one that we mentioned in Brazil in 22 being the one on top. But yeah, very sour for him to get removed. But I completely agree with what you say, Sam. I mean, we're gonna have to follow the rules. I mean, we simply have a minimum weight, and if you fall below it, you fall below it, and you're done. So it was slam dunk. But that still makes it, it doesn't. Yeah, of course, you never like to see these kind of disqualifications. I think we all felt somewhat similar when two cars were disqualified at the end of last year at the race in Austin because of the plank wear. These are things that you don't want to see, but these are things that are part of the sport too.
So here's the funny thing, that as you guys were talking about it and talking about tire wear and how well George drove, I honestly, regardless of what the outcome was, it's a huge props to George. I genuinely think he was the driver of the day. For me personally, in my books, in how well he managed those tires. But simultaneously, what I think was interesting was that post-race, there were other drivers who were saying that, you know, they felt confident on their tires and they could have gone on longer stints. So it would have been interesting if some of them had put their foot down the way George had and decided to stay out on, you know, just a single stop, and the chaos that would have ensued because of the tire wear and the weight post-race, that I think would have just thrown everything more into a loop. And, you know, rules are rules. It is very unfortunate, but I think this would go down as one of his best races, very much like what you said, because it was a mega, mega drive, and he really looked after those tires really well, and he held off not just Lewis on fresher tires, but also Oscar, who was chasing. He was holding down the two of them, and this was the first time in quite a long time, I think, where the front three in regular racing conditions finished under a 2 second gap between the three of them.
But it's a really good point that you're making there, because actually Russell pitted on lap 10, like we already mentioned. If you look at some of the other drivers, and let's look at the top teams, Norris pitted only in lap 15 to change his mediums to hard. So if you think about it, he would have even had 5 laps less to drive on those hards if he would have gone for that strategy. So it is actually very surprising nobody else did that. There were even drivers who pitted after Norris. Magnussen pitted on lap 17. Would he have gotten into the points if he would have gone with a similar strategy like Russell? But then again, also a very good point you're making by saying that then we would have had complete chaos with weighing all the cars afterwards. So I guess I don't know. You can look at it from many different angles, but I guess what teams will have to think about in the future is if they do go and opt for such a strategy and actually during the race decide to do one stop less, that this is definitely something to take into account. And mostly if you're ending your race on the long stint, like if you would have done it the other way around, like Sainz, who started on hards and just drive a really long stint on those hards and then switch to the medium tire for, let's say, the last 10 laps. I mean, Russell was driving for 10 laps on those mediums. Then, of course, you don't end up with that worn tire at the end of the race and probably don't have this issue. Then again, if you start on the hard tire and you have an early safety car, which in the end we also didn't have, talking about safety cars, I'm jumping subjects now, but of course that's something that I thought might happen when Joe was slowing down, seemed to have engine problems, then started his car up again, but then again DNF'd, like I mentioned. But I guess that safety car wouldn't have done too much, because all in all the field was very much packed still at that point, at the early stage of the race. But we didn't see any safety cars. We saw a lot of drivers actually slightly touch the gravel during the free practice sessions, and even in qualifying we saw various times Piastri just skipping the gravel during the race. The only car I saw into the gravel was Sainz, when he had a pretty significant lead, when he was still on that hard tire and the rest had pitted, and he was, I don't know how many seconds ahead at that point of Norris, who also hadn't pitted yet, and then he made a little trip to the gravel. What did you make of that?
It was something that in some respects, kind of touching on what you've just gone over, where we saw that during free practice, we saw a bit of that during qualifying. I mean, I was more surprised that there wasn't more of that. So if Sainz was the one that went in, then he was the one that went in. I would also say just one really good point that you mentioned during that back about Lando, and comparing it to the fact that when he pitted on lap 15, what would have happened had they have maintained a strategy that was similar to Russell, would the result be different? I think that's a really important point that you bring up, because going back just really quickly to that, I mentioned how I was a little bit confused by the strategy that they had put him on, where they had pitted him almost like a delay if they were trying to match the same pace as Max at the point, who was his nearest competitor. And I felt like had they had potentially maintained a strategy with that in mind, where instead of pitting, they had kept him on those hards, because he was maintaining a pretty decent pace, I wonder if maybe he would have had a better result than he did end up with. But I like you said, I'm surprised that there wasn't any red flags. I'm surprised there wasn't any safety cars. And of course, I was actually surprised that Joe managed to get his car back up and running.
Yeah, so with that being said, I honestly really, really agree with everything that you said there. And the fact that this is, I think, one of the few Spa races of late that we've not really had any flags or virtual cars out. Despite the fact that there were no major incidents, it was still a spectacular race. Like, it was really, really good in terms of the overtaking, the close gaps between the drivers, all around. I think with the minimal incidents, we still had an overall competitive field, and I'm just thoroughly enjoying it. Like, even though I wish Ferrari are doing better, I'm thoroughly enjoying the competitiveness that we are seeing this season. It's been a while since we've seen something like this.
No, I can't agree with you more. I mean, in the end, this is what we've been talking about for a while now, that this is what we basically missed. I mean, what we had in the 21 season and what we didn't really have afterwards. And you can be a fan of any particular driver, but I think in the end we all watch the sport, even though we might have our favorite driver that we would want to win, and I do want to see Alonso win, but
nice.
In the end, you know, you want to see them win with competition, and you want to see a close battle, and preferably with more than one team. And I mean, okay, of course, take Verstappen out of the equation, but you had four different teams on the first four grid spots at the start of the race. We have, okay, albeit Russell being taken out of the equation, but we did end up with three different teams on the podium. Yeah, that's, you know, that's something that we can all be very excited about. And I'm just wishing it continues, and I have good hopes for 25, and well, 26. I mean, we're gonna have to see what's gonna happen.
Yeah, that's the big question, right? Is 2026? I mean, I just really hope that we're able to continue to keep it competitive as we've been so fortunate to see this year. I think you've already touched it on the head. Most of us can all collectively agree that it has been an absolutely thrilling season. And this is what we all love to see, regardless of your favorite driver, just like you mentioned, or team. So, yeah, I just wonder, once 2026 comes around, what we're going to see there. But you never know, right? And we have a little bit of time before we see that unveiled.
I think until we see what happens in 26... it's best we just enjoy the rest of this season and what's coming next season, because every time we have new regulations, it's always bound to have one dominant team. So again, there's plenty of unknowns. A lot of things are being shaken up for 26. But as of now, in the current F1 climate on the grid, I want to say relatively clean racing. Of course, you have some incidents here and there, but I still want to say it's been relatively clean. It is very, very, very exciting. And it's making me excited to see what happens towards the end of the season, because we don't know who's going to win the Constructors' Championship.
Amen to that. All right, so let me take you guys into the scores, and it's going to be a bit of a chaotic score session, because of course, with the FIA drama afterwards, again, I had to recalculate scores, so I basically have two sets of scores, but of course, we're going to stick to the actual ones, but not without mentioning who would have won if we wouldn't have seen the George Russell disqualification. Let's first start by saying that we had 1,016 people playing the game this weekend. And I would like to first ask both of you, how many people do you think had a correct podium? And the person who gets closest to the answer can choose to either start or have the other person start during the quiz. So, of course, we ended up with a podium of P1 Hamilton, P2 Piastri, and P3 Leclerc. And my question to both of you, how many people went with that exact order?
All right, I'm going to say two people. Actually, I kind of, now that I say that, I probably would have picked two if it was Russell who had stayed. I'm going to change that, actually. I'm going to say six.
I honestly, with the initial podium, I went with zero. But now, Sam practically almost took my answer. So what the number I had in my head was seven. So I think let's go with seven.
All right. Well, actually, with the initial podium of Russell, Hamilton, Piastri, you would have had the correct answer, Ajit, because there was no one who went with that.
Thank you.
So I'm taking it that it's Sam, you're going with six. Ajit's going with seven.
Yeah, I'm sticking to that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll stick.
All right, well, there was no one who had that podium either.
Damn it, I should have kept it at zero. Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
All right, well that means Sam can go ahead with the quiz, but we'll get to the quiz a little bit later. So look, initially I thought that there was going to be, and I don't know if you can hear the rain on the background, it just started to downpour here, but anyway.
So initially
there was an average score of 29.7. Now with the new podium, and not only with the new podium, of course, it's, you know, everybody moved one place up, meaning that P10 instead of Ocon moves to P9. Ricardo moves to P10. Anyway, we'll get to the exact order later when we do the quiz, but it means the average score for the game is 33.2 points. Not very high, not very low, somewhere in the middle. Can you guys actually guess what so far was the lowest average score for which race, so the least predictable race, and which one was the most predictable one? Do you have any ideas? This is not going to count for points, but just to see if you can feel this one out.
So, prediction for least predicted race and most predictable race.
For this season,
for this season, I am going to say this was probably... Yeah, this one would probably be the least predictable, I think. Most predictable first race of the season.
I would say that most predictable, I would probably go with the first race of the season. Least predictable, I'm going to say Canada, because that was when things kind of started to take a turn in results.
All right, well, actually... Yeah, that's. I would have also saying that Bahrain is the most predictable one. I do understand why you went with that. It was in the end. It was Japan.
Oh no!
But
way.
The funny thing is actually that both in Bahrain and in Japan we had exactly the same podium because both races ended with Verstappen, Perez, Sainz. Oh. But yeah, that was the most predictable one, and the least predictable one, taking out of the equation the sprint race, was Austria, because that was there were only 16.0 points as average score. Anyway, so this one sort of falls, let's say, in between that. Japan, by the way, having an average of 63.3, that was very high. Anyway, yeah, so initially, without the George Russell disqualification, we had a podium with two South Africans on it and with a winner from India, Arjun Bajuri, but unfortunately Arjun, and he's already very well aware of it, has been stripped off that podium. Unfortunately, in this case, not because of
honorable
him doing
mention.
Anything wrong, but he was in the George Russell boat. Actually, he had a P1 Russell, P2 Hamilton. That's why he scored a lot of points. He's still on P18 though, I gotta say. So at least he's not completely stripped of all his points like Russell is. But he's no longer on the podium. We do have a podium now with somebody from India, still a different person. Manju Sahu scored 62.5 points, is on P3. We have on P2 Esdalmi Rodriguez from the Dominican Republic with 63.3 points. And then on P1, it might not be Arjun, but instead we have a, well, I don't know how to put this in the correct way with forecast, but we have somebody that wins his home race, let's just say. So we have a winner from Belgium,
nice.
Bert Vinkier, and Bert has been playing the game for a long time already, actually. He scored 65.9 points, and I think it's only the second time that we have somebody that wins Forecast F1 in the weekend where the race is in the same country as that person is. Sam, do you remember who was the other person?
That was actually last weekend, was it not?
Oh, sorry. But we did forget to mention last weekend that we had a winner from the same country as the winner of the race. So that's what we had last weekend. We had Ted Board who won,
yes.
And we had Oscar Piastri who won the race. So that was two Australians. But the other occasion where the winner won with the race being in the same country was with Maeve when she was on the podcast for
That's
the Austin
right.
Grand Prix, where she actually was present and she won the forecast weekend that weekend as well. So this is the second time that has happened.
Well, it's a rarity, but when it happens, it is pretty cool. And I mean, the fact that regardless, we had a winner last weekend that also was at the top of the podium for Forecast F1 and happened to be the same country as the winner, and then lo and behold, now we have something that also is a rarity. So that's pretty cool.
The one thing we know for sure is that I would never get on that podium because Sepang is no longer on the list.
Yeah, you won't get in that list. Hopefully I do, next race, but we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks for that. Anyway, looking at the actual standings in the game, and I had written this all down with the previous point scores, but let me try to get this right. So we actually still have Rosario Vinci on P1. He only scored 34.9 points, whereas Annelie Beumer from the Netherlands, she scored 45.3. She actually scored a lot more with this George Russell disqualification, which means that she's moving very close to Rosario. She now has a total of 771, and he has a total of 773. So only 2 points difference. At some point, I remember that was after the Spanish Grand Prix when Rosario actually won that weekend and scored 100 points. He was in a lead of about 38 points, if I'm not mistaken. So that lead has shrunk dramatically. And on P3, we had Taha Umar from Turkey, but he actually scored, he didn't score that bad, about the same amount of points as Rosario, but our P4 scored a lot of points. Sumit Jaiswal from India scored 55.1 points and is now on P3. So we have a new person on the podium spot, and that's how it stays for the summer break. And with the scores not being super high this weekend, we do not have any new scores in the high scores worldwide, also not for the continents. What we are going to look at are the country accumulated points, where in the top 25, Mexico goes from P8 to P6, moving up two places, and France makes the same move the other way around, going from P6 to P8.
Okay.
Canada actually overtakes Greece for P13, and Pakistan overtakes South Africa for P18.
Nice.
And the country with the highest amount of places gained is Vietnam, moving up four places in the ranking. Guys, I think it's time to look at our points, and I don't know, who are we going to start with?
Sam, it's your call. You won the toss off earlier.
You might as well rip the band-aid off, Anton, and go ahead with my score, because I will say this actually before you even do. Prior to Russell getting disqualified, I was going to come into this episode so confident and excited to hear my result, because I thought that it was going to be really good. But yeah, why don't you explain where I'm at now?
Yeah, well, your good score was coming from your podium, which was Norris, Hamilton, Piastri, and that would have gotten you to place 26, which would have been really good. Because of course you would have had Hamilton and Piastri on the right spot. Now you don't any longer. You get 50% of their points. But actually, Verstappen moves up from P5 to P4 after disqualification, and you had him on P4. So you're still scoring a decent amount of points, I would say. You had 44.4 points. So that's very decent, given that the average was 33.2. With that, you're ranked P150 for this weekend, 150. And that means you're also moving up in the rankings. You're going from place 56 to place 45. So,
oh, nice.
You're in the top 50.
Okay, well, you know what?
Yeah.
Not as bad as I thought, and I will take that.
Ajit, you went with a podium. Do you remember what podium you went with?
Yeah, I do.
Because you go with a different one every race, man. So
I do go with a different one every race. This year I've been good. I've been consistent about who I'm not picking for P1, but I've been choosing a different podium each time. This time around, I went with Lando, Charles, and Max, 1, 2, and 3. Yeah, so that was an...
You went with a Tsunoda P10. I'm looking at it now. That's surprising, given his 60-place grip penalty, no?
I mean, he did drive a pretty decent race. He wasn't too far off of the points, I don't think, so...
Yeah, but he also started from the back of the grid.
Hey, man. Chaos follows wherever I go. I am all about the chaos.
So you finished with 25.9 points on P741. Yep. And do you know where you were in the standings?
I do not remember. I know I've been doing decently well so far with my points. I think this is the first time in the last few weeks where I've actually dropped pretty significantly. So I'm pretty sure like my positions in the rankings has gone down.
It did go down, but only with one spot, so it's not that bad. You were on P495, you're now on P496.
Fair.
And I gotta say,
to the 300s by the end of the season.
Yeah, and I gotta say, in the end, you're not doing bad every weekend. You scored very high for the Monaco race, so I will still give you a little bit of props for that, because you finished P5 there in that weekend.
Thank you.
Which was the Leclerc Piastri Sainz podium. So that was a very good race for you. You finished with 66 points there.
Yeah, that was a solid race, and that was a race that I was honestly waiting for. And that was one where I truly, whatever I wanted to happen, happened. And it just worked out perfectly well. So, you know, we'll get back there. I will score another 60, 70 points at some point this season. It's just a matter of when. But it's coming. It's coming.
Well, before we go to the quiz, let me also mention my score. I scored 36.6 points. And with that, I'm P379 for the weekend. But it looks like, because I was on P17 after the race in Hungary, but it looks like most people in the top 20 didn't score that many points. I'm actually moving up to P15.
Nice.
1-5. So, I'm overtaking. I'm taking two spots. Well, I guess then without further ado, we can go to the quiz. Talking about the quiz, do you guys remember the last time you played the quiz in the podcast for the Italian Grand Prix last year? What you ended up with scoring?
I think Sam beat me that one, no?
I mean, on a good day, I can't remember what I had to eat the day prior. So if you're going to ask me if I recall the score, I'm going to say no. No, I don't. But since Ajit thinks I beat him, I mean, maybe I did.
Yeah, I think it probably was like a 6-4 or something like that. 6-4, 7-3.
Yeah, so actually I went back to that episode and listened to it. Yeah, of course we have 11 questions, so there's 11 points to be scored with the fastest lap. Sam, you outscored Ajit with 8-3. And mind you, after winning that quiz, Sam, and you also said, and I'm quoting here, that Ajit is reckless with predictions. So, you know, just to spice things up a little bit here and, you know, actually have a really competitive session. Now is your time for some, for getting back at her, Ajit.
Well, I mean, I wasn't lying, was I?
I mean, we all know I am reckless and chaotic. So is it surprising? I don't think it is.
Not really. You're right.
All right. Well, no pressure.
So let's get into it then. Yeah, pressure aside, we're gonna of course start with Hamilton. Although I am gonna ask the both of you also, how many people you think who would have had it? Okay, it's not gonna count, but I want to know how many people you think had Russell on P1. This will not count for points.
I am going to say nobody.
Well, I don't think Sam was paying that much attention, because we definitely know that there was one person who chose Russell on podium. So I'm going to say two.
Yeah, you paid good attention. Arjun, who would have won, had him. I told you that indeed. There was 10 more people who did. So there would have been 11 people actually who would have gotten that P1, right?
Anton, can we wrap the quiz out now faces. Where I beat Sam?
He just wants to put a bow on it so that he could just take one win, you know. That's fine. We still have what?
You can count
questions?
This point in your mind.
Yeah, I'll count it.
We're gonna get started with it now. Let's start with Hamilton on P1. And Sam, actually, you can choose who's gonna go first, because you were closer with the podiums.
You know what? Let's go with Ajit. Ajit, you go first.
Hamilton P1, I am going to say 677.
Okay. That's a very bold statement. I really hope I'm right then now. I'm going to say 389.
Which you guys are both really, really, really far off, sorry to say. There was only 36 people who went with the Hamilton win.
Oh, Oh, right. I forgot to think about the free practices taking into account before predictions. I forgot how this game works.
That's fine. Still 1 point.
Yeah. So let me just... do you know how many people... Because it's interesting. I think this was the first time that the landslide of the people went not for Verstappen win. We usually always see... Of course, it has to do with knowing up front that he was going to get that 10-place grid penalty. But I'll... And I know it's going to affect maybe your predictions for the other scores on the quiz, but I'm just going to throw it out here. You can do whatever you want with it, but we had 662 people who went with a Norris win, and 230 people who went with a Verstappen win, 44 people with a Piastri win, 36 with a Hamilton win. Then we had 16 people, nice number, for Leclerc, because that's his racing number, and Russell 11, Perez 7, 6 for Sainz, and there were still 4 people who believed Fernando Alonso would win it, or perhaps, I don't know, believe, hope. Anyway, yeah, so that first point's going to go to Sam, and that means, Sam, you can go ahead and guess how many people do you think had Piastri on P2?
I'm going to go with a high number. I'm going to say... Well, actually, now I doubt myself after you just told me the numbers for everyone for P1, but... you know what? I'm going to stick to the threes. I'm going to do 375.
That one is... Let's go 264.
All right. There was 402 people who went with a win for... Or sorry, with a second place for Piastri. So that points also Sam's. Moving to Leclerc. Ajit on P3.
Let's see, Leclerc, P3. Oh, I don't think a lot of people would have put the Ferraris up there, so I'm going to say somewhere around 67.
I'm going to go less than that, and I'm going to say 34.
Means that that's your first point this quiz, Ajit, because there was 112 people who went with Leclerc on P3.
Nice, thanks.
Thanks to yourself. And P4 for Verstappen.
Okay, that's my go.
Sam.
I am going to say 172.
Ooh, Verstappen, P4. I'm going to say 212.
It's a point for Sam. You're only 25 off because it was 147 people. So it's 3-1. And... Ajit, you're up for Norris on P5. Well, you guys 44. Already know that, you know, a lot of people 44. Went with Norris for the win, so he must have been high up. Okay, you say 44.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 87.
It was only 11 people. Everybody had them up on the, yes. On the podium. So that's a point for Ajit. It's 3-2. And we're moving to Sainz on P6.
Sainz P6, I'm going to say 68.
Sainz P6, let's do 100.
Nice. It's a draw at this point because it was actually a lot of people who went with Sainz there. I guess with the Ferraris around those spots. 236, the right answer. So
jeez.
It's 3-3. And then we're up with Perez on P7.
Perez P7, I think I'm going to bump this one up. Let's say 312.
Okay, I'm going to play the strategy game on this one and say 311.
That's what Sam does when she's worried about losing.
I don't know. Maybe he hasn't listened to a lot of the podcasts recently because that seems to be the right way once in a while.
Well,
but that's fine.
I think it. Yeah, no, it's well, it's still about whether you go over or under. But you went the right way. You went under. It was 161 people, so that's your point, Sam, and that means you go ahead with P8 Alonso.
I am going to say 170.
82.
Let me double check. 82, you say? So that means you're 49 away. And Sam, you are That one goes for Sam because it's right in the middle. It's 129, but that's closer for Sam.
All right.
See this.
What's the score now?
You're 41 away, and Ajit was.
No, I
yeah.
Mean
oh,
the
sorry. The score
right
is
now.
5-3.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
I mean,
yeah, so there's still
at
three.
At least I was a bit more courageous with this instead of playing, you know, the safe way of doing it.
Yes, you are right. There's still 3 points to be scored with Ocon, Ricardo, and the fastest lap for Perez. So let's first go with Ocon on P9.
I'm going to pick 42.
Ocon on P9, I want to say 27.
Okay, it was 58 people, so that one's also Sam's.
Fair.
Yeah, playing it real safe, am I?
It's 6-3 now, so with six
wow.
points
six, four,
you've basically won the game.
6-4.
But we'll still go ahead and go for Ricardo. I want to see how many people you think went with Ricardo on P10.
Ricardo P10, I am actually going to say a higher number here. I think more people would have picked him there. So I'm going to do 124.
Ricardo P10, I want to say 135.
That means another point for Sam. You're only 27 away. It was 97 people.
Fair.
You're still 1 point away from making sure this doesn't end with the same score as last time, Ajit. So you can go ahead with fastest lap Perez.
Fastest lap Perez. Let's do 2.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to say more than 2, but I won't say a lot more. I'm going to say 15.
Means we end with the same score as we did with Italy 2023. It's 8-3 because there was 13 people who went with Perez on fastest lap.
Oh, I was close. Okay. How about that?
Fair.
How about that?
Good job.
I mean, 11-4. I technically won after the first question.
What?
Calling it.
We can now at that point for you the Russell one. So it's not 8-3. It's 8-4 that way. But yeah.
No, good game.
And I guess that leaves us with I guess being on one hand slightly sad that it's going to be a while until we see a next race weekend. It's going to be I think the race is the 25th of August, if I'm not mistaken, in
yep.
Zandvoort. Yeah, that's right, exactly a month. So that's going to be a bit of a wait, a bit of a summer break. And I guess the teams are ready for a summer break. We've seen 14 great races this year so far. And I hope we're going to see another 10 great races after the season. I would say that for those listening, think about which friends or family you could bring into playing Forecast F1 so that you get a couple of other people that you can compete with. And I don't know. I would really say that it's most fun to play if you're playing against other people and you compare scores. So not only that, you know, more people from your country also means more points for your country. So definitely find some more people and that will help us too. And other than that, I guess we can talk a little bit about the race in the Netherlands. But guys, what are you thinking? I mean, this is a lot of time to sit on deciding who you're going to put on P1. For the next race, a lot of time to think,
a lot of time for the teams to think as well. I believe that, moreover, as not just looking
but the
at
teams
the
teams don't need to predict, Sam.
No, I know that, but what I was going to say is that for me, like, what I was thinking about before we even started the podcast today was, and this is just aside from the predictions, was just like the next 10 races are going to be really critical for between McLaren and Red Bull for the constructors, because McLaren has really eaten into that gap that they did have. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing how that plays out. And I think it's going to be really exciting. And I obviously wonder if during the summer break, if we potentially get any announcements, maybe from the Red Bull side, because of a driver change, we don't know. But I think that that gap has, based on the gap being shortened, I think that it's applying a lot of pressure in some areas to make decisions. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited for the back end of the season. But I will say, going into predictions wise, yeah, we have a lot to think about. I think, obviously, looking back on the first half of this season, we have been surprised time and time again. We've talked about it quite often, how exciting it's been when it comes to who captures the podium. And so I don't expect anything less from the Netherlands. I mean, obviously, I think there's going to be a lot of people that'll probably be predicting Verstappen to win. And that would be a very fair estimation. But you never know. You know, maybe it is Papaya again. Maybe it is a Mercedes win. We'll find out in a month. So I'm looking forward to it.
Ferrari.
Or Ferrari. Well, just to back you up, I mean, you're right. Again, this weekend we see that McLaren scores 28 points, and the total points, the point tally for Red Bull this weekend is 19. So they're definitely getting closer. And we might, like you say, we might actually see, since the Dutch Grand Prix has returned, we might actually see a different winner this time than we've seen in the first three editions. So that's definitely something exciting to look forward to. But Ajit, you mentioned Ferrari. You think they're going to perform well?
One thing I know for sure is that there will be definitely more upgrades to come with the car. Whether the upgrades work or not, that we don't know yet. But again, if we're talking strictly, you know, mathematical numbers, the Ferraris aren't, they are what, I think roughly about 20 points behind McLaren, and McLaren are about 40-ish points off of Red Bull. Let me get those figures straight out proper. So the McLarens are roughly about 40 points away and Ferrari is about 60 points off. So, you know, with how this season's going, I would not, again, I did take a shot in the dark at the start of the season and say that Red Bull will not win the Constructors this year. And that is still what I think is going to happen. I think it's going to be the McLarens who win it this year. So it's going to be really, really interesting. And much like what Sam was saying, I do think this is going to be the first, and you as well, Anton, this is going to be the first year in a while where chances are relatively strong for it not to be a max win at at the Dutch Grand Prix. It's going to be fun. I'm excited because it's, like I said, and like I've told you this off mic as well, it's been an amazing season all around, and I hope it keeps going the way it does. And now with Mercedes coming back into the fold, having fixed that blip that they had over the last couple of years and at the start of the season, that's just going to throw even more points all around disarray in the mix, because you've now got another team that's going to be taking points off of you. So it'll be interesting. It's not just going to be down to where the Red Bulls and the McLarens finish because of the other unknowns that are involved.
No, you're right. I mean, if we look at it, it's good that you mentioned Mercedes there in your talk, because they've won three out of the last four races in the end, and perhaps the Austrian one was slightly lucky, but the Silverstone one was definitely because of good strategy, but also a car that had good race pace. I mean, in that race, I think nobody could really tell which car was actually the fastest. I think it varied during the varying conditions during the race. And what's the last time that we've really been able to say that during a race different teams were faster on track?
I think it was 2013, Anton. Like, honestly, if we were to go back, I think it was 2013 we had like proper multiple teams being able to compete.
No, but it's actually a fair point, because in a lot of cases when we had in between those years, when we had battles between two different teams, it was mostly just two teams. I mean, let's go two seasons back, where at the beginning of the season we thought that Ferrari was really going to challenge Red Bull. Yeah. If we go to 21, it was It was Red Bull and Mercedes, and then let's say 19 we had Mercedes and Ferrari. But mm-hmm. all in all, it's been mostly two teams that battle each other, and we really see three to, well, let's say four teams now. And I think you said it just before we went to the scores. Let's just relish and let's just enjoy this, because you never know how long it lasts. I'm with you there, Sam. Let's enjoy the last 10 races. It's going to be very interesting to look forward to who's going to win that constructors battle, that constructors championship. And I really wouldn't be able to tell at this point. Like you said, I mean, the difference is it's 42 points now, I think. So it's really not that far apart between McLaren and Red Bull.
Well, I think one other real quick thing to mention is that Red Bull has also struggled with the pace in their car. So I think that is something that we can attribute to the results as well that they've had. So either way, it's going to be exciting. I'm really looking forward to the next 10 races, as I'm sure everybody else is. And we have some really, really exciting tracks on the calendar coming up that will amplify, I think, or have the ability to amplify battles between those two teams. So I think it's going to be a really exciting remainder of 2024.
Singapore and Brazil.
One last side note that I would like to make is that just so you're all aware of how this thing technically works with forecasts, is that if we see a driver switch in the summer break, which might happen, it might not. I'm not only referring to Red Bull. I mean, we don't know how long Sargeant's going to be in that Williams either. But in case it does happen, and in case you have made your predictions already going into, because you might be afraid that you might forget about it when we get back to race season, keep in mind that you can always make predictions now. Go back to your predictions in the app and change them. Let's say you put a driver in the top 10 that's not, and probably my Sargeant example wasn't great because I don't think many people are going to put him in the top 10. But let's say, for argument's sake, that you put Perez on P5 and then Red Bull puts another driver in the car. That means that you will automatically get a switch. But what happens if the driver that gets switched is already on the grid? So let's just say that Red Bull switches between Perez and Ricardo. Let's say Perez goes to the V-carb and Ricardo goes to Red Bull. Your drivers will also be switched in the game, because technically you're not predicting the driver, but you're predicting the car. So that means that let's say Ricardo goes to Red Bull and Perez is no longer on the grid, and if you had Perez in your predictions, that means it will be automatically switched to Ricardo. And if you had Ricardo in your predictions, the person that's going to take his seat is going to be in your predictions. Now, so if the two drivers switch around between the two teams, then they will also automatically get switched around in the app. Okay, sounds a bit confusing. I would just say, you know, just prior to the race weekend, check your predictions again. I guess that's the conclusion to draw here. A lot of talk maybe for nothing, but at least you get an idea of how it works.
Well, I was just thinking, imagine we go into this summer break and absolutely nothing happens. I mean, it's
that
very
could happen
possible.
Too.
I mean, we already had silly season at the start of the season, and that was crazy enough. So, you know, I think right now it's just more of the drivers are going to be settling for where they end up for next season. Apart from Red Bull, I don't really think that we're going to see any major shifts likely to happen.
Well, let's wait and behold.
Well, I think without further ado, it's about that time that I get to hear the Canadian national anthem. And, you know, I must say, before you even finish off with that, Anton, I'm starting to feel a little bit like Verstappen with the Dutch anthem after so many wins. So,
yeah, and we're all starting to get a little bit frustrated with it. But then again, rules are rules. So I guess
honestly,
this is,
I don't doubt
technically it. How it works. Yeah. Yeah. Ajit, I was
hoping
gonna
beat
some
Sam
more
the next
points
time.
From your end. Yeah.
No, Anton, we'll make it that I beat Sam the next time.
All right. We'll cook up the numbers perhaps for next time.
We'll
see what
we
do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we can figure it out.
All right. Well, thanks coming back on the podcast, Ajit. It was nice having you. It was nice talking about the race, about the weekend. And we'll see what happens then next time. And let's hope that this time flies by those next 4 weeks, because I can't wait to get back at it.
Yeah. Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me on. Like, it's been a good time. It's always a good time.